Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 9th of September, Anno Domini 2017, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues, here comes the news. This is a good one. Equifax, one of the largest credit reporting agencies and thus possessing a massive cache of sensitive private information, was hacked. The breach has put 143 million Americans at risk of having sensitive data stolen. The cyber attack occurred somewhere between the middle of May and July 29th, which is when the intrusion was discovered, and we're just hearing about it now. What makes the Equifax attack particularly troublesome is the company's status as a central clearinghouse for sensitive credit-related information, including Social Security numbers, driver's license numbers, and other data that can be used in a variety of ways to harm those affected. While the Equifax breach isn't the largest in terms of number of victims, Yahoo's attacks involved more people, for example, it is of concern because of the kind of personal information that was stolen. Examples of sensitive information include 209,000 credit card numbers, personal information relating to credit disputes for 182,000 victims, and data that could be further used to access medical histories, bank accounts, and more. This is about as bad as it gets. If you have a credit report, chances are you may be in this breach. The chances are much better than 50%. According to a press release issued by the office of U.S. Senator Mark Warren, the Equifax attack raises important questions about the role of government in responding to the ongoing threat to personal information. While many have perhaps become accustomed to, this is a quote now from Senator Warren. While many have perhaps become accustomed to hearing of a new data breach every few weeks, the scope of this breach involving Social Security numbers, birth dates, addresses, and credit card numbers of nearly half the U.S. population raises serious questions about whether Congress should not only create a uniform data breach notification standard, but also whether Congress needs to rethink data protection policies so that enterprises such as Equifax have fewer incentives to collect large centralized sets of highly sensitive data like Social Security numbers and credit card information on millions of Americans. In the meantime, Equifax has established a website that individuals can visit to learn more about the attack, find out if they're affected, and enroll in free identity theft protection and file monitoring services. If you've ever applied for credit, and that's most people.
I was going to say most anybody.
It's a good idea to head over to that site sooner than later. Beware, however, if you want to find out if your data has been exposed, you waive your right to sue them. Like most websites, at the bottom of this news site is a section called Terms of Use. There in paragraph 4 is bolded uppercase text of note. It tells site visitors that you agree to waive your right to sue and instead must resolve all disputes by binding individual arbitration. Of course, it will be up to the courts to decide whether arbitration agreements are enforceable. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is, were you affected by the Equifax breach? Your choices are yes, no, and no idea. I don't care if someone steals my identity and runs up massive debt in my name. So far, we've got only 20 people. No is half the votes. Yes is 5 votes. We are therefore bucking the national trend, except we are hitting the national trend because the other 5 are no idea. I don't care. if someone steals my identity and runs up massive debt in my name. And frankly, for the five of you, you deserve everything you get. And of course, I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff, the very first choice there is the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And currently, at least, the first item in the discussion is 9-17. Were you affected by the Equifax breach? Five people have posted so far. It's an interesting discussion, and you should join it. And, of course, you can also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Even though this isn't on the scale of the Yahoo, I think the data that's being affected, you know, Yahoo, big deal. So they steal, you know, your email address, right, or something like that. I mean, Equifax, hello, that's Social Security numbers, you know, all this personal information about you that somebody else could create a whole nother identity.
That they're especially supposed to keep safe.
Right. That's their whole point.
Yeah.
Is that they keep stuff safe, and they didn't. Here's the thing that I don't understand. 143 million records, including names, addresses, phone numbers, social security numbers, birth dates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And nobody noticed that much data disappearing?
Yeah, really. I was born at night, just not last night.
I don't get it. At the very least, somebody in the networking department should have raised their hand and said, a lot of data going out right now.
Yeah.
A lot of extra data.
Well, they haven't said anything about how or what or when.
It might have been
an inside job where a guy just had a hard drive and copied it. But then I would have expected a lot more data to be missing.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a definite...
And I love the way they're warping around it so that you can't sue them.
And the form to see if you've been affected or not is kind of fishy.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it?
Yeah. And if I came across this form from somebody, I wouldn't trust it.
I didn't trust it at first. I went to like five or six other sites that I trust to see if this was in fact legit.
And
apparently it is.
And it's what is it? Trusted ID Premier is the website you go to.
Who the hell ever heard of this place?
Who are they? That is like the definition of a phishing attack.
Yes, it really is.
You think you're one place and they send you to somewhere else.
Yeah. Yep.
However, I went there specifically from the Equifax website, and they took me to this.
And it's an Amazon root CA.
I know. Everything about it says it's fake.
It smells worse than rotten fish.
Yep.
And you have to put in your Social Security number.
Well, only the last six digits, which are the more important ones.
Right. You only need the last four to steal an identity, but we'll give you the last six.
Right.
Right. So... Yeah, it looks fishy, but apparently it's completely legit, and they will tell you whether or not it is possible that you have been attacked.
It's probably safe to assume that you have been.
It is safe to assume. I'm I'm happy to say that I was not. They said no for me. They said no. I was not involved in the attack. So I'm very happy about that. But I know a number of people who, in fact, were hit pretty good. So. This is the one to take seriously.
And they're giving you a year of free identity theft. Identity theft protection.
Well, identity monitoring, I believe. Yeah. We've all seen those commercials.
Yeah. No, I don't really stop a robbery. I just report it.
Yeah, I'm a bank monitor, not a bank guard. So basically the idea here is that, this is the one to take seriously. I mean, you guys are right. If somebody steals your Yahoo password,
big deal.
Assuming you haven't used that password for other things like your bank.
And you don't have Yahoo as your rescue address.
Right.
A lot of people, Yahoo was first. So when you signed up for Gmail, they wanted an email address. Well, I'll give them my Yahoo address. Or when you signed up for Amazon, you gave them your Yahoo address.
Right.
And so bad guys are using these leaked Yahoo passwords
to steal other passwords
because that's what you're
But even so, that's far less of a problem than having your entire identity stolen.
Here, you want my credit history? My credit. Well, see, now that's the other thing, too. They can have my crappy credit history.
Right.
You want to run up massive debt? Too late.
Who was it who said, who steals my purse? Well, I can't even say that on television, on radio, but nobody's going to want my identity. Mm-hmm. But that's a lie, of course, because they can rack up massive amounts of debt. They can take out new credit cards. They can do all that stuff. And it all goes to your name. And now you have to prove that you didn't do it.
You are guilty until proven innocent.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yep.
It's a real problem, and there's no easy solution at this point. But certainly the problem is if you put a freeze on your stuff, it means you can't take out a new loan or a new credit card or anything else.
Yeah, double-edged sword.
It's a very tough. It's a very tough choice to make, and 143 million of us are in that position right now. You know, but I tell my students this all the time. They always say, "No, but I don't have anything." I said, "Yes, you have a credit history, good or bad. You have a credit history.
Yep.
And if it's not horrible, somebody else can take out loans and credit cards in your name for which you are liable, by the way. And so, you know, if you don't have a problem with that, then just sit, put your head back in the sand and go for it.
Yep.
But
even if the liability may be only $50 per card, the hassle of clearing your credit history of fake data is terrible
because it follows you around for the next 40 years. It's a real issue and a real problem.
Heaven forbid you have a common name and someone else's delinquent bill gets put on your report.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. All right. We should go to the phones. Our first caller is Carl from Pottstown, PA. Hi, Carl. What's up?
Well, I have a question.
Yes.
I'm using several different web browsers. Two of them are Chrome and Internet Explorer. Normally, I like Chrome a lot better. But there's one problem I'm having with Chrome. When I go to a website with Internet Explorer and I print the web page, the printer works fine and everything's good. When I go to Chrome and try to print any web page, the printer acts differently. It clicks louder. It moves faster. It pulls the paper through at a rate that I think would almost damage the paper. It prints fast, and it spits it out so fast that the paper does not land in the tray. It lands beyond the tray on the floor. And when I try to read the paper, it's very, very hard to read. So I need help with this.
All right. Well, first, how are you connecting to your printer?
With a USB cable.
It sounds like the default print settings in Chrome are sent to draft.
Yeah,
and so it prints a very quick, you know, low quality draft, and somewhere in the print command there should be a quality or settings to put it up to at least normal, if not higher quality settings. Usually that's in Chrome. I'm finding it now. Chrome has its own print command.
Right. The problem is I'm using cloud printing, and so I don't have quite the same setup that you do, but it does, Steve is right, it does sound like Chrome is set to print in draft mode.
Okay, I'll check that.
Yeah, that's would be the only difference if you're not connected via wireless.
Okay.
Okay, else?
Yeah, thank you very much. I'll give that a try.
Perfect. Thanks, Carl.
For a lot of times, printing in drafts, it saves ink and it does print faster. So when you don't need an actual higher quality print, you can sometimes print in draft.
Right.
But if it's printing too fast and too low a quality, then you got to print again and that wastes ink.
Right. Well, whether or not and whether or not draft is usable for you depends on the printer you have.
Yeah. Now, Chrome on the Mac, at least, probably on Windows too, uses its own print dialog, and there's another button to print using the system dialog. And so somewhere in here, let me try more options. There should be, no, I don't see an option for print quality.
Yeah, but you're not on Windows at this point.
Yeah.
So I
have to go to the system print dialog, and then I can get the quality settings.
Right.
You may have to do that, too.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenick, Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
No, you got to hold out one moment.
Do I?
Yeah.
All right, I'm holding.
All right.
As we told you, folks, this month of Soundbites is definitely a birthday month for the whole crew and a lot of other folks. And tomorrow, matter of fact, if you happen to see him today or tomorrow, wish Nick Francesco a happy birthday. How young are you?
I am 67 years old. I will be tomorrow. 67 years old, proud of every minute. Proud of every minute. I should have apparently died when I was 10. So the last 57 years have been nothing but gravy for me. So I'm very,
and Elaine
very
has
happy.
Put up with it all.
Elaine is a saint. I'm the first to say it. She's a saint.
Yes,
there's no
is.
Question. But it's my birthday. You guys are later on in the month, 19th and 20th, I want to say.
Yep.
And of course, Soundbites was last week, the 3rd.
Yeah.
So it's birthday month for all of us.
Yeah.
And I'm delighted. I want to thank Jerry Seward for bringing cupcakes to this week's Rochester Google meeting. So that was very nice. So it's all good. It's all good. I'm honored every year when I get to celebrate having been around for another year.
This side of the dirt. And as my grandfather used to always say, yeah, I'm sticking around another year just so I can PO other people off.
That's exactly right. You take your joy where you can get it. If it's in other people's irritation, then I win.
Mm-hmm.
All right, back. Elaine, a couple of years ago, got me a shirt that said, curmudgeon, don't say I didn't warn you. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. Hi, Ed, what's up?
Hi, Nick. Just in regards to your Equifax that you were talking about, I got an email from CDNet, which is Ziff Davis. And they said the data breach checker is basically useless. They tried putting different types of data in the fields, and it accepts anything. People have checked it twice, and they come up with different answers. I mean, a bunch of things have been done with it. Basically, it's a waste of time. I don't even think they even know, you know, who's affected. But you are supposed to get a letter in the mail from them if you've been affected, and that's probably the best way to handle it.
Yeah, I agree. I suspect that I don't know what's going on with that site, but I know people who it said that they have been affected, and other people have said they've not been affected, and it's
well,
just,
apparently, if they check again, they end up being affected. You know, it's like I say, I don't even think they know who's been affected. I think it's just some kind of a scam for them to get them to agree to that document to not sue them.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what it is, because they're raising the concern. So naturally, your first instinct, like anything else, is, oh, I got a quick check. And then they don't read that fine print down at the bottom.
Yep.
So if you are, you can't sue them.
Well, the thing about it is, if you got stuff like LifeLock, which I've got, they haven't told me anything yet. So apparently, they don't know either.
Right, right. Well,
they only know when Equifax reports it.
Yeah.
And the bigger annoyance is that they didn't find out about it for 2 months and then didn't report it to the public for 2 more months.
Right. Yeah.
And I heard one story, I haven't fact-checked it yet, that several of the Equifax executives sold a bunch of stock.
Yeah, a couple of days before it was announced.
It was announced to the public. But it had been announced to their security firm. They hired an outside security firm and reported to the authorities, but not to the public.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, they'll probably be going to jail.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's certainly a possibility.
Yep. Okay, have a nice day.
All right, thanks, Ed. You too. This is a complete mess, and I don't know what to say about it.
And there is no federal law requiring companies to disclose breaches.
Right, and that's what Mark Warren...
The Republicans shut that down.
Right, that's exactly right. And Mark Warren is saying we really need that.
Yeah.
We need to make it harder for them to gather information, and we need to make the punishment much more stringent if it gets out.
Yeah.
And we'll see. It is not a consumer-friendly environment. In Washington these days, it is very much a business friendly environment. So we'll see. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jack from Brighton, New York. Hi there. What's up?
Okay, so I need you to either tell me or confirm what I heard from the horse's mouth. I'm thinking of switching internet providers here in Rochester from the traditional telephone company I won't name them, to the local cable company. And I'm concerned about all of my email addresses, probably have five or six, which are all tied to the phone company. So I called them and said, I'm thinking of moving to La Jolla, California, where you don't have service. What happens to my email addresses? And they said, oh, those are free, and as long as you point your Outlook or your whatever your email client is to our SMTP servers and so forth at their address, you'll continue to have your email.
Hmm.
Is that true?
I've certainly not heard that before.
And I've heard, I've seen just the opposite. Our customers have come in, and after they cancel their internet service, their email stops working because that was part of the service.
Yeah,
right.
And that's one of the main reasons we recommend not using your internet provider's email address, whether it's the phone company or the cable company, because you can always move or change companies. Use something like a Gmail address.
Gmail
doesn't matter what service, your internet service you have.
Yeah, now of course, like you guys.
Yeah.
When I first got email addresses, there just wasn't any alternative.
Well, what I would suggest is this. It depends, of course, on whether I'm assuming these are personal addresses rather than business addresses.
Well, one is a business address, but most of them are personal, yeah.
Well, what I would suggest doing is finding an alternate service that you like Gmail or Microsoft or Apple or one, you know, there's dozens.
Yeah.
And open some addresses, and then for a month or two, assuming you can stand to remain with your current provider for that long, make sure that everyone who writes to you knows that you are changing your address.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's change of address notice. Essentially.
Yeah, essentially.
One of the big hassles is remembering what internet services, you know, do you pay your electric bill online, your gas bill online?
Right.
That magazine subscription you do once a year,
mm-hmm.
what address did you use for them?
Yeah, and also, since we're talking about it, the IRS.
Yep.
Right. Right. But you can change all of those. And if you do change all of those, one of the things you can do is your last act at your old ISP would be to forward everything.
How's that?
Well, you would go into I do not own that particular ISP. Rather, I do not own an account.
Yeah.
I'm checking. I think they stopped that.
Oh, did they?
Well, the local phone company uses Yahoo as their back-end mail server.
Yeah.
Which we don't like now that Yahoo lost a billion addresses.
Right, right.
And I think they turned off the forwarding option. So you can't forward your email to another email address at the server.
Uh-huh, interesting.
Let me see if I can find that on mine.
He's looking at that. But if you can do that, of course, then that's the thing to do. If you're at Yahoo, then why wouldn't...
It's still a Frontier
address,
but Yahoo's the back end. And maybe that's why... It might depend on when you got your service. Maybe that's why they told you can keep your email address, because it's a Yahoo address.
Is it?
But it isn't.
It's a Frontier
internet.
That's the only suggestion I can make. And for everyone else listening, if you ever have the inkling that you might want to change your ISP, get a different email address now. Certainly Yahoo is a choice, as is Gmail, as is
iCloud.
Cloud and a bunch of others. So anything that doesn't end in, that isn't from a specific internet service provider, that frees you up from being chained to that provider.
And some of the ISPs now don't even bother giving you email because there's so many other free
sources. There's so many out there.
Have to manage it.
Yeah.
Right.
Gmail would be your best bet to go with. That way, if you go back and forth, say, from Frontier to whoever, you know, or whatever, you don't have to worry about it because your Gmail will be your Gmail. And it doesn't matter what service provider you have.
Now, is Google still scanning everything in your Gmail messages?
Okay, two things. Yes and no. Yes, they are scanning everything that comes in for scams and viruses and et cetera. They have always done that all of the providers do that. So that's done. That's a done thing. Everybody does it.
And for ads?
As far as ads go, they have said they are going to stop doing that. Now, the other thing is, the third thing would be for search and stuff like that. One of the things that Google prides itself on, of course, is the ease of search. So if you use the web-based version of Gmail, you can search for anything. Senders, receivers, text in the document, et cetera, from the web interface of Gmail.
Mm-hmm.
In order to do that, they must scan your mail. I mean, obviously, they've got to know where the words are, right?
But it's not a person doing it.
But it's not a human being. It's all specifically computer-based in order to do those things. So I can't say no, they're not scanning it, but they say no, they're not scanning it for ad insertion anymore.
Okay. I can set up Outlook or Thunderbird to get Google email as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I have a number of Gmail accounts, and I manage them all through Thunderbird.
Yep.
Okay.
And, in fact, Thunderbird will actually recognize it. So if you say, you know, you're at gmail.com, BAP, it fills in everything else for you.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, very nice.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously I called because I didn't want to believe what Frontier said. It was too good to believe.
Well, I'm sure they're the person who said that to you believes it as to whether or not it's 100% accurate in every case. I do not know.
And it may stay for like 6 months after you cancel your account just
mm-hmm.
to make sure
they get around to it.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. Did you discover whether you can forward?
I haven't been able to get in yet.
Your suggestion of forwarding.
If you can do that, forward.
Would not last forever, would it?
Correct. It won't.
No, it won't. But here's the other thing you can do, by the way. If they are going to let you keep your account in Thunderbird, you can set up the Frontier account and forward from Thunderbird.
Set up.
Right. So in Thunderbird, you're going to set up your new account, right? jack@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
You also have your old account, jack@frontiernet.net.
Right.
In Thunderbird, one of the things you can do is forward mail from one account to another.
Oh, I see.
So have Thunderbird forward jack@frontiernet.net to jack@gmail.com.
That's only happening on your machine, isn't it?
Well, it happens through your machine.
Hmm.
But yes.
Right, but yes.
It actually goes out to Gmail and then comes back?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, yeah.
So all the mail is then now also on the Gmail server. So even if and when FrontierNet shuts down your email, you will have those emails archived at Gmail.
Okay. Well, those are all good suggestions. I'm surprised that I haven't heard more about this problem before, because I'm sure that there are dozens, you know, hundreds, thousands of people switching all the time between ISPs.
Oh, yeah. We've been saying it for years.
Yeah,
use the email addresses you get from your internet service provider. Always use a third party for your email. That way, you're not chained. It's one less chain.
Mm-hmm. Of course, but remember, I started these accounts when I was using a 300 baud modem.
Yeah.
One of the first email addresses I had with a local ISP, when I switched to another ISP, that address worked for like years.
Yeah.
I guess until the company shut down.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because it was just a mail server. You know, that they never checked who was sending mail or who was receiving mail, if they were still a customer or not.
Right.
Really didn't cost them very much to not do that.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Right. A little bit of disk space and you're done, really. Start now, and it becomes, give yourself a little bit of time, and it becomes a little less painful that way.
Yeah, well, I've got both providers now, so we'll let it go a few months and do what you suggested.
There you go.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Jack. Have fun.
Bye-bye.
Yep. Yeah, and for the rest of you, think about that. If you're not, and I'm not saying that any of the internet service providers are bad. That is not the point here. The point here is that it changed you to that internet service provider when you may at some point not be able to continue with that internet service provider. Like Jack says, if you move to California, you're clearly not going to have the same internet service provider. So having your email go to a neutral third party is a good idea. All right, listen, don't go anywhere because we're going to be right back with a whole lot more phone calls and news and all the other junk that we do with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Gary from Greece, New York on the line. Hiya, Gary. What's up?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Peachy. How are you?
Good. I've got an email question concerning Office 365.
Yeah?
I'm trying to forward a document to multiple contacts.
I'm sorry, can you say that again? I'm having trouble hearing you. Sorry.
I'm using Office 365 email.
Yes.
And I'm trying to forward a document to multiple clients, contacts.
Okay.
Is there a way to do that without typing each individual name in there?
Well,
select them from your address book.
Right. You can select them from your address book. You can also create a group.
But at some point, you've got to
type them all in once.
Yeah, so if you send the same a group of people messages, you can make a group and type all the addresses in once, and then from then on...
To the group, and then just send it to the group.
Send it to the group.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, sorry. At some point, you got to type them in somewhere.
Most of the time, as soon as you start typing in a name or an address, it looks in your address book and fills in the rest of it for you. So unless you have 27 Steves, you usually have to type three or four characters before it finds the right person.
Or unless you have three or four addresses for the same person, I do with you.
Yeah. Which one this week?
Exactly. But once it's set up, it's set up.
Yep.
So that's the good news. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Fairport, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
HP Scan to Email relies on the local mail client being on the PC versus my boss uses a Gmail, like I'm in the Gmail. But now he wants to be able to scan the email, and I don't want that many steps for him. You know, he gets confused easy.
He'll have to install an email program on the computer to use with Gmail. So when the... Yep. When it scans to email, there's an email program for it to open.
I was trying to avoid using the POP server and trying to scan to the Gmail itself, but
You can use their IMAP server, which is usually better for being able to synchronize mail between devices.
Yeah, Gmail does IMAP, which means that it keeps the mail at the server, and so wherever. Please try not to breathe directly into the microphone of your phone, please. Because you use IMAP, POP generally, POP downloads the mail to a specific computer. IMAP leaves it on the server, and so no matter what computer you use to access that IMAP account, you will always see the same email.
So I'm looking for then is to HP scan to IMAC. Then I look that route.
Well, no. you know, to an address. Sorry, go ahead, Steve.
Well, so yeah, it's still going to be scanned to email, but then it's going to open your email program, Thunderbird or Outlook or Live Mail, whatever email program you pick, and you tell that email program to use Gmail.
Oh yeah, so I'm going to have to migrate him back to Thunderbird. I know that. Okay.
Yep,
that's what I'm going to have to do to make it work for him.
Now, what operating system is he running?
He's running Windows 7.
Windows 7. If you're using Chrome...
using Chrome with Gmail, yeah.
Then there is an advanced settings where you can tell Windows that Chrome is your email program.
Oh, there we go.
It will that's open Gmail in Chrome.
Yeah, so all you have to do is go into the advanced settings and you can set that up pretty easily.
I will post this link if I can find it. Great. This was an answer to a question, so let's just do this.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have that issue.
Yeah, more and more people are using webmail instead of a mail program. One of the advantages of a mail program, you know, like Thunderbird, is that you can get all your mail from a dozen different services in one reader, which is handy.
Well, Gmail will let you do
that,
too.
And the webmail programs are doing that now, too, yeah.
Right. Okie doke.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
it. Thanks, Tom. We appreciate it. Thank you. excuse me. I beg your pardon. But generally speaking, setting up email these days is much less arcane than it used to be, and computers understand the concept of webmail much better than they did 10 years ago. So it shouldn't be a terrible terribly difficult thing to manage.
In fact, for a while there was a time when Windows didn't include an email program by default, and you had to find one and download it.
Right.
It's probably because somebody sued them over including Outlook Express.
And everybody then, has sued everybody over everything.
Yep. So.
But yes, Microsoft has been sued multiple times for including their own web browser, for including their own mail client, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. What's up, Dennis?
Well, I was looking at that website that you mentioned about putting in your last six Social Security numbers.
Right.
What I read, I think it was from Associated Press yesterday, that when you, if you later on, I guess they want you to enroll. They'll just tell you at the beginning whether you've been hacked or not, and then they'll send you like an appointment thing to so you can enroll. But I was reading that you have to give your credit card number, because after your first year of monitoring, you will automatically be charged for the next year.
With typical in these breaches is the company gives you a year of credit monitoring for free, and then after that you pay for it yourself.
Yeah, I think
or there'll probably be another breach before then, and you get another year free.
Right.
Yeah, I thought people should just be aware if they decide they want to be monitored, they ought to know that they're going to have to give their credit card number, and that automatically it will be charged without them doing anything after the first year.
Right. Thank you, Dennis. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, that's it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. And that's Dennis's clarification. That makes a lot of sense. These people are going to be forced to give you a year for free if by no other reason than for the, the lack, getting rid of bad publicity. But after that year, they figure by then the furor will have died down.
Yeah.
And they can just make a few bucks off of you. So, and more than a few bucks, these people are very proud of their monitoring services. They are not cheap. This is bad all the way around. There's no good coming out of this. Senator Mark Warren says, only if they're held accountable and only if the penalties are both mandatory and severe, will anything be done to change or fix it. And that's sad, but true. Generally speaking, you've got kind of a Hobson's choice here. You know, the bad or the worse, I guess, is how that works. Or I guess a Sophie's. What did Sophie choose?
Choice.
Anyway,
yeah.
The point here is.
What was her choice and why did she choose it?
Right. the point here is that the Equifax situation is not going to go away quickly, particularly for those who have been compromised. You're going to have really years once something hits the web, and particularly once something hits the dark web, it stays there for a very, very, very long time. And while you can certainly change your credit, your bank account and things like that, you can't change your Social Security number. And there's a bunch of other stuff you can't change. So be very careful as to what you do and what you decide to do and how you decide to do it in light of this breach. It's much more serious and much more far-reaching in terms of consequences than it at first appears.
Because they have so much of your private data already.
They have so much of it, and they have hidden from us the fact that they were breached. So that, you know, I admit to being a cynic. I admit it. Sometimes I'm even proud of it. So the real question becomes, this is what they admitted. What haven't they admitted?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just not comfortable with this. We've known all along that Equifax and the other two have been gathering our data forever, and we don't seem to care, many of us. And it's and because they have had no constraints put upon them, there's been no reason not to gather those data. So I guess we'll see if the government, in fact, turns around and gives you the consumer the protection you need. Like I said, the current climate in Washington is very business-friendly and not particularly consumer-friendly, so I'm not sure how much will be done, but I guess we'll see as time goes on.
And most
as to where the uproar lies.
And most people don't necessarily realize there's anything wrong with their credit history until they go to apply for credit and get turned down. It's probably a good idea to join one of the credit monitoring companies. There's several free ones available that will monitor things on your credit report to make sure if you see something new that was you and there isn't something false on your report, which is very hard to get off.
Right.
Especially with all the pre-approved credit cards that get sent through the mail. You know, someone, you move, and the person living at your address now gets your pre-approved credit card, and they say, oh, yeah, sure, I'll take that.
Right.
And then suddenly there's another credit card in your name that you didn't know about.
Right. I believe it's annualcreditreport.com is the one that's run by Equifax and TransUnion
and Experian, the three of them, yeah.
I think, but honestly, I don't know. But you are allowed legally one credit report per year, free.
Yeah. So Experian runs freecreditreport.com. There's so many of them that they claim to be free, but you have to pay a subscription fee to actually see your data. Credit Karma does a lot of TV commercials, and they are free for the basic basic information.
Right.
I thought the government ran a free one.
So did I, but it does seem to be annualcreditreport.com will give you one free credit report from each of the three major bureaus. It doesn't provide credit scores, and it doesn't provide FICO scores. Which is the thing that most of the lenders use. But it does provide free reporting. You get an actual report.
Yeah.
You know, with some of the others, you get the cute graphic.
Mm-hmm.
With these guys, you get an actual report, but you have to figure out what it says.
Credit Karma gives you the number.
Right.
Does give you your actual credit score. And what's interesting is you get different scores from different agencies. Which is
right.
Odd.
But as always, before I signed up for one of those or more, I would read all the fine print. Just like with the Experian breach, you might find yourself giving away stuff that you didn't really want to give away, but you got to be careful. And this is, you know, one of those situations where danged if you do and danged if you don't, right? I mean, in this Experian breach, you did nothing wrong. In fact, you did nothing. You didn't even allow Experian to have your data. Experian just took it, and now they've essentially just given it out to everybody.
That was in the fine print of whatever application you filled out that said we can check your credit history.
Right.
Buried in that fine print says we're going to share this with other people and ask them.
Right.
But it does look like annualcreditreport.com is the one that the Federal Trade Commission points you to. So that is the legitimate government-backed real one.
Right. And it is important to be aware of which one you're going to and which one you should be going to. It's important to actually take charge of your own credit and understand what it is. What the heck? Oh, there we go. And to understand what it is that your credit looks like to the rest of the world. Your credit reports matter. You know, we may think, well, you know what? I'm an old guy. I'm retired. What does my credit matter? Yeah. Well, you know, when time goes on and you want to get some credit for something, or you suddenly start getting bills for $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 in the mail, maybe then it becomes a little more important to you.
Yeah, being too lax is not a good thing either.
And my son was looking to get an auto loan for his first car, and he has no credit history. He's 18, never had a credit card. So you got to get a credit card to get some credit history so you can get a loan to have more credit history.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I co-signed my daughter's car loan so she could get a credit history started. All right, we're done for the first hour, and you've wasted that hour, but you get another chance to do it again. So don't go anywhere. We're going to be back with a whole lot more of your calls and a whole lot more news and a whole lot more of our nonsense with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415, and we'll be back. It's 59 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a few with a whole lot more sound bites right here on the Truly Great and grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. This is actually my favorite story of the week. Research suggests voice-controlled assistants by Amazon, Apple, and Google could be hijacked by ultrasonic radio commands that humans cannot hear. Researchers in China set up a loudspeaker to broadcast voice commands that had been shifted into ultrasonic frequencies. They were able to activate the voice-controlled assistant on a range of Apple and Android devices and smart home speakers from several feet away. And the U.S. team was also able to activate Amazon Echo smart speakers in the same way. The Chinese researchers suggested an attacker could embed hidden ultrasonic commands in online videos or broadcast them in public while near a victim. In tests, they were able to make calls, visit websites, take photographs, and activate a phone's airplane mode. However, the attack would not work on systems that had been trained to respond only to one person's voice, which Google offers on its assistant. Apple and Google both allow their wake words to be switched off, so the assistants cannot be activated without permission. According to the report, a Google spokesrobot said, "We take user privacy and security very seriously at Google, and we are reviewing the claims made." Dr. Stephen Murdoch, a cybersecurity researcher at University College London, said, and I won't do the accent, "Even though the devices are not designed to handle ultrasound, if you put something just outside the range of human hearing, the assistant can still receive it, so it's certainly possible." Do you own a smart speaker? Are you worried? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
We've already seen cases where TV commercials will accidentally activate the devices. And then there was the big debacle where a fast food company gamed Wikipedia so that when their commercial aired, the Amazon device, or was it the Google device? One of the devices would read the Wikipedia entry about how great their product was. And that was in, that was just right out in the open, vocal. So
right.
The fact that they're doing it high frequency. We've always wondered how the you know, like the Google ads don't trigger the Google device and the other companies too.
Right.
And I thought that maybe there was some, you know, high frequency sound in the background or in front of the commercial that the devices have been programmed to ignore the next, you know, whatever seconds of audio.
Right. Well, yes. And then there was the case of the kid who was sitting on his couch and a friend walked into his house because he had yelled through the window,
yep.
Siri, unlock the door.
Yep.
Oh.
And Siri unlocked the door because Siri doesn't differentiate by voice.
I remember a huge argument with someone about their parrot said, come in. And so they went into the house. And so, well, you broke into my house. And, well, no, I didn't because you said come in. That wasn't me. That was the parrot. Well, somebody said come in, so yeah. I did.
We used to have, back when iPhones first came out, when Siri first hit the iPhone, we would end a class, and students, of course, immediately get out their phones. And invariably, somebody at the back of the room would yell, Siri, call home.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, 15 kids are going, no, Ma, I didn't. Everything's fine, Ma. It's all good. So we've seen that as a prank. But now, because so many people, excuse me, are controlling their homes with these things and using their smart devices, you're now looking at a security issue. And if you can do it without a human even hearing it, because theoretically, if you hear somebody yell, Siri, unlock the door, you can yell, Siri, don't.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, that sort of thing. But in this particular case, no, you don't know what happened. And why in heaven's name do the phones listen to sounds that cannot be made by the human voice to begin with? I do not know.
It was probably an oversight on the programmers. It just says listen, and they didn't only listen between 20 hertz and 20 kilohertz.
That would take more programming and maybe even more hardware.
Yeah,
I would have been in deep doo doo because remember when I had the parrot?
Oh yeah,
Casey.
Yep.
Casey would sit there when I first got that bird. You know, and he talked. It was an African gray.
Beautiful plumage.
Yeah. I mean, and that bird, he was up at the front of the shop. I'm letting that one slide, Steve. Yeah, right on by. We won't even go there. Anyways, so I'm in the back of the shop, and all of a sudden I hear the shop bell go off that somebody came in the door.
Yeah.
I go up front, look around, nobody there. I go back. And both Dan and I at that time heard the bell go off again. We come back up. Nobody's there. So we went around the corner, and all of a sudden we heard KC tout off. He could mimic that bell perfectly. Now, you son of a gun.
Yeah.
He'd just sit there and go, what's up, boo? Because he was busted. But that parrot, though, he could mimic things, like you say, so well. It didn't take him long. Like the other time I remember, he listened to the radio. And they were playing, because the Harlem Globetrotters were coming to town.
Right.
And they were playing the Sweet Georgia Brown tune.
Oh, great song, too.
That bird whistled it completely, one time and one time only. You could not get him to do it again.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's things like that. Although, my phone, it must be just trained to my voice. Because
right.
Nobody else can sit there and say, you know, the command and get it going.
Right, right. You can train your phone to your voice. You can train Google Home to your voice. In fact, Google Home is currently, at least, the only one that allows multiple people to use it and still keep things separate because it recognizes, you can train it to recognize different voices. So, my wife could say, okay, whatever the catchphrase is, what's on my calendar, and get a different response than I would get.
Yep.
But that's the...
Oh, sorry.
And speaking of that, Steve's phone is ringing.
But, I'm anxious because just as we got here at the studio, my phone had just finally finished updating to version 8,
right,
which is Oreo.
Right.
And now there's supposed to be newer features with that. I could do like a picture within a picture.
Right.
So if you're doing two things, and Oreo was supposed to be a lot faster and more streamlined, more secure, and everything else. So I get to play with it this afternoon.
Very nice. Very, very nice.
See what happens.
Right. But yeah, so these smart speakers are terrific. You know,
but they can get you into trouble, like we've just pointed out a few things that,
exactly,
you know.
Exactly. A lot of people have them in their homes.
Yeah.
I like that I can make phone calls from my Google Home. I like that I can leave messages from my Echo Dot.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all, you know, nice features. But the ability for someone to... I've turned off on my Echo Dot. I have turned off the Amazon ordering feature.
That just sounds too dangerous.
It really does. And in fact, people were ordering things like pizzas.
Mm-hmm.
There's a famous commercial where the kid orders a pizza.
Yep.
From Domino's through his device. And people were complaining that their device ordered a pizza.
There were stories last Christmas about little kids, you know, getting dollhouses and toy sets by asking, you know, the device.
Right. So I've turned that off, so I don't worry about the commercials anymore.
Well, then the other story I heard last Christmas was the little kid knew that to touch mommy's sleeping fingerprint to the phone to approve the order.
Yeah. Kids are amazing.
Yep. When you're napping, make sure your fingers aren't out.
<You're right.
laughs> Oops.
You used to have to worry about that at camp with bowls of water.
Yeah.
But now you have to worry about it for spending money, which is worse.
And for you younger generation, take a bowl of warm water.
No, do not. Do not. Oh, for Pete's sake. The opinions of Steve Ray are not those of Jazz 90.1, its management, its staff, or any right-thinking human being, as a matter of fact. And certainly not of Dave or I.
Definitely.
But
Vaseline behind the radiator was always my favorite. Back in the olden days when you had exposed radiators.
Right. Our house still does. We're forced water heating through the radiator, and it keeps the house nice and warm.
The other one that was good. Take like a paper bag and fill it with shaving cream, and then just slide it under the crack of the guy's dorm room door.
Oh, you use shaving cream. That would be cleaner.
Yeah,
sorry, go ahead.
I went to a religious school.
Yeah.
So did you.
Yes, I did. You have no idea.
Oh, I can
you have no idea.
I can remember when, you know, we were going in the Marine Corps, sit there, and you know, guys were out drinking all night. You know, and they're supposed to get up and do guard duty or that, and you couldn't wake them up for beans. So you'd sit there, like you say, take the shaving cream, and you just put that right on their face, you know, mount it up or load it up in their hand.
They tickle
their nose, and bam, they slap their face.
Yep.
Oh, we used to do that more times than not.
What can I tell you that we used to do in the seminary that would not get me into any trouble? Oh, we used to put on our cassocks and surplices and our dog collars, the Roman collar,
mm-hmm,
and go trick or treating with shot glasses.
Jose, how many houses did you get to?
A lot. Well, not that many, frankly, by the time we were, we were walking in those days too, so it was all right. But to get back to smart speakers, many people have them, and many people are ordering them, are planning on getting them for Christmas. Google is coming out theoretically with an Echo Dot-like thing that will be much less expensive. Last year, the Echo Dots, which is when I got mine, were $39 on sale. So,
and then Apple's HomePod is due out by Christmas. That will be much more expensive.
Much more expensive. Well, the Echo and the Google Home itself and the HomePod or whatever, HomePod,
mm-hmm,
are going to be at the high end.
Right, and the HomePod is more geared as a speaker, too, in addition to an assistant.
Right. And the Dot and whatever Google is going to call their one is designed to be just a smaller thing.
Yeah.
That you can hook to better speakers. Now, I've got an Echo Dot, and I have it hooked to very nice speakers.
Yep.
And so I get actually, although I have always been impressed by the Google Home speakers, the Echo Dot now has better sound.
Yep. Do you have any of the Amazon Dash buttons?
I do not. Thank you very much.
That just sounds dangerous. A button, you push a button, and something gets ordered.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, you put it next to your paper towel rack, and when you're out of paper towels, you push the button, and that's the way they're gearing it toward these, you know, everyday things that you run out of and need. And it just seems dangerous. You push that button, and then a truckload of paper towels or shows up.
Well, and how many times do you push the button? And
well, apparently it won't make another order until the last one is completely shipped.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Which is a little nice.
Right. But the other thing is, you know, God bless them. They're making it awfully easy to do stuff. But when are those things going to be hacked?
Yeah.
You know, and to what? You know, that would be just for mischief. If
probably your Amazon credentials are more important than Experian.
At this point, that is true.
Yeah.
We're finding, you know, as we shop and find fewer and fewer of the things that we like in the stores, we're turning to Amazon more and more and more.
Right, and which is a self-defeating cycle, because then stores don't want to carry as much anymore because they don't have the foot traffic.
Right. I would rather go to the store. I would rather buy the things I like from the store. There's a certain brand of deodorant that I prefer, and I can't find it in town anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I can't find it anywhere, so I order it from Amazon.
Yep.
They don't make a Dash button for it.
Yeah.
But that's the sort of thing that we see more often than not going on. And that just, you know, that's the rise of Amazon. They make it convenient to buy anything. And because they buy in such quantity, even, you know, my deodorant, which is not a common one apparently, they can still carry by the truckload because they sell truckloads all across the world, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah. Should we be taking a break?
We're coming up on it right now.
Excellent.
I'm just trying to get one
other
thing.
Oh, yeah. Dave is. Is that a porn site, Dave?
No.
That you're on right now?
Yeah, it's Facebook.
Uh huh. All right. Yes, it is. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina, Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported. Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. All right, now listen, I need people to pay attention to this. There have been these rumors going around that Google Drive is going away.
Huh?
Yeah. I've been hearing it everywhere, and
really?
I'm tired of it. Here's the deal.
It is, sort of.
Well, and the problem is Google's naming convention, which sucks.
Tell us how you really feel.
Exactly. The Google Drive desktop app for both PC and Mac will begin to die on December 11th. Google said this week, depending on whether you're a business user or a strict consumer, it will be reborn as one of two apps, Backup and Sync for consumers, or Drive File Stream for businesses. Note that Google doesn't appear to be making any changes to the Drive service itself, just the apps, the desktop versions of the apps. Google currently offers 15 gigabytes of online storage with Drive, and those files are accessible with any device with that Drive app installed. Those devices include Android devices, iPhones, iPads, whose Drive mobile apps are apparently being left untouched. Google said it will stop supporting the Drive desktop app for Macs and PCs on December 11th, and the Drive app will simply stop working on March 12th, 2018. At that point, consumers will have to use Backup and Sync. Business consumers subscribe to Google's G Suite apps will be shifted over to Drive File Stream, a preview app that is now being pushed mainstream. The major difference between Backup and Sync and Drive File Stream is that there's the latter's ability to stream files from the cloud, a popular placeholder capability that can display copies of all your cloud-based files without actually storing them on your PC. Backup and Sync syncs files more traditionally, placing local copies on your desktops, not right on your desktop, but wherever you say to put them. And then backing them up in the cloud. If you want to back up your photos and videos, you use backup and sync. Ditto with a generic USB drive that you want to add to the cloud. Where it gets a bit confusing if you're working on a PC with G Suite access, because then you can use both services. Then it's important to understand the difference between backup and sync and drive file stream. Google published an explanation, which Steve can put online at some point. The bottom line, in October, drive for Mac PC users may start seeing messages notifying them about the change, according to Google. If you're a consumer drive user, it sounds like little if anything will actually change other than the name. Business users will be forced to choose between two new apps, however. So do you even use the Google Drive desktop app? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
That's what I use currently for backing up a lot of my other stuff that I don't want to convert. Because most of it's, you know, I say all the photos, all my photos are up on Google Photo. It's silly not to. You know, for anybody right. to take advantage of that, because as I have said countless times to folks, and you know, folks worry about backing up all these programs and everything else, and it's like, folks, you're wasting your time. Here's a plain and simple fact: if you had to use a disk or a CD or whatever to install a program, you're going to have to do that again, even if you reinstall Windows. Because there's no guarantee that everything is going to get hooked and connected correctly. I've seen it too many times over too many years. It's better just to worry about backing up the data. Photos, documents, anything else, you know, backing up, say, if you're using QuickBooks or whatever programs that, you know, you're putting data into. Usually they'll allow you to, I'm using QuickBooks as an example. Right. They always have a backup feature. Back it up to your desktop and then back it up to another source. Those are the items that you want to really back up, not the programs. Don't waste right. your time.
Right. I tell people this all the time. My machine crashed. Luckily, I had done a disk image. Really? Why did it crash? I don't know. Okay, so if the reason it crashed is because there's cruft in the registry, you backed up that cruft and it's back again now. Oh, yeah. Okay, all right, I get it. But that is what that is. All right.
Yeah, it happens.
Back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Cheek.
Tawaga, New York.
There you go.
Keep seeing if you might complete the Cheektowaga. Maybe not. Anyhow.
I'll leave it hanging for an hour if I have to.
I don't use the Google application because I'm on Linux and they don't have one for Linux. There actually is a third-party maker of software called NSYNC that does have a utility for watching changes in your file system and syncing them with Google Drive.
Right.
But what I do use is a neat little thing called Google Drive OCaml Fuse. OCaml is a programming language, and Fuse is Linux's name for file system in user space. So basically, this is a daemon that runs and looks for accesses to your files. Not file system. It you have to explain what a mount is for the people.
Right.
That's where you take a file system that could be located anywhere. It could be on your local hard disk. It could be over the network file system, SMB, anything like that, and make it part of your file system so that accesses to that are translated to go somewhere else. So, this works wonderfully for me because I store my KeePass password database on there. So, the implication is whether I do access that from my Nexus 7 tablet or my home PC or anything else, as long as it has access to Google Drive in some way, it's all centrally accessed, so I don't have to worry about sticking it here and there. I also back up a copy on my local disk just in case I don't have access to Google for some reason.
Well, of course. Of course. But, yeah, people are finding that Google Drive, well, all of them, but Google Drive gives you a lot for free. So people are finding that things like Google Drive are very, very handy, and therefore there are lots of utilities that are being written to take advantage of the things that Google lets you do and to do them easily and quickly. That was the whole idea behind the Google Drive app, which will now be the backup and sync app.
Well, I might also mention for Ubuntu and its derivatives users, there is the Drive package, which if you install that, it gives you command line access to Google Drive. So you can do like Drive list, and it will list the files for a current working directory, or well, your root directory. So I have a subdirectory called KeyPass. If I said Drive list KeyPass, it would list all the files in my KeyPass subdirectory.
Right.
So that's also a neat utility for Linux users. I'd also like to mention in the wake of this Equifax problem, there is a site that I heard on Security Now called twofactorauth.org. Two is spelled out T-W-O. And what that is a collaborative list of vendors of all sorts, banks, universities, believe it or not, password vault programmers that offer two-factor authentication. And what is the means? Is it by SMS? Is it by for lack of a better thing, you call it Google Authenticator codes?
Right.
Actually, RFC 6238, if I recall correctly. Do they have a hardware token? Do they have a software token? It's a very neat site to, I would say, shop around. I mean, unfortunately, the credit union I'm with, the outsourcer that they use, they do not offer two-factor authentication. It's a little better than most in that they have you answer three, quote, security questions, unquote, and they will present one of those three randomly when you go log in. So you basically have to know all three, and you can't know ahead of time which of the three they're going to ask you.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's better than a simple username and password.
Which is easy for someone to break into. So for everyone else, the two-factor authentication, your password is your first factor. So a second factor is like a code sent to your cell phone. So that when you're logging into a service, you get a code on your cell phone. So if a bad guy is trying to break into your account, they can't because they don't have your cell phone. One of the problems with two-factor authentication is that text messaging is not secure. SSID, not SSID, EMEI, the identity of your cell phone can be cloned, and so the bad guys can also get your cell phone. But the chances that a bad guy is trying to attack your account and also has your cell phone are pretty low. But it does stop the bad guys from breaking into an account with just a password. The danger we're seeing is beyond that, where what's being called now social engineering is the bad guy calls up, a company and says, I forgot my password, let me in. They say, well, what's your two-factor code? Well, I don't have that phone anymore. Well, what's your security questions? I don't remember. And you convince them enough to change your password anyway.
Right.
So there's been a call in the security industry to eliminate password recovery. If you forget your password, you're screwed, which is a good way to do it security-wise, but in the real world, probably will never catch on.
Right. And that whole idea of two-factor authentication, one factor is something you know, your password, and the other factor is something you have, your phone.
Right. So having it ask you for two things you know isn't really two-factor.
Right.
Because either of those things you know could be looked up. And there's plenty of cases where somebody's security questions were too easy, or a public figure had their email hacked because their security question was, where did I meet my husband? And it's in their Wikipedia page. And,
right.
So
for heaven's sakes, Ms. Hilton, why did you put Tinkerbell as your password?
Right.
Your
yeah, exactly.
name.
Yep.
Exactly.
And the password and that's the other his part dog's
of
name?
What? Yeah, and that's the other part of the problem. We all tend to use, we all, not being you and I, tend to use passwords that are eminently guessable.
Mm-hmm. Or even questions. You know, like we've said before, though, as far once you get into it and they want to ask a security question, and they'll say, what's your favorite color? And you might say, car. You know,
yeah,
whereas
that's
most
what
folks
I tell people,
plan,
why?
Yeah, yeah, you don't, it doesn't care what you put in for an answer.
Right.
Just as long as you can remember it.
I tell people that all the time. Lie and lie big. Don't just say green if it's yellow. Yeah. Say car.
Yeah.
You know,
sure. I like the color of my car.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That's why I bought it.
Now the people that Have I Been Pwned, which is now up to nearly 5 billion pwned accounts.
Right.
They've started a new service. Not quite sure I like it or not. You can put in your password, and it will tell you if that password has been pwned.
Nice.
So if you put in a simple password, let's
like
put in
password.
Monkey. All right. Yeah, password. PASSWORD.
Oh, that's good.
You get, oh, no, that password has been used in a data breach.
Right.
So do not use that password.
Duh. Well, and that's right up there with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
If your password is a word, it is
amazing.
In
the
data
breach.
Amazing.
It's the same password I use in my luggage.
Yeah. Why didn't you tell me my butt was so big?
Yeah.
Censored for radio. So we're trying to stop saying password and start saying either passphrase or passcode.
Yeah.
Because your password should not be a word.
It should be a phrase.
It's something called a dictionary attack, where the bad guys feed every word in the dictionary into the password field. And if your password is a word, it can be breached in seconds.
Yep. Right. And so we always tell people make it a phrase. I used to tell people make it a song lyric or a movie quote. The problem is they would use the one that they were always whistling or always saying, right? So that's a problem.
Now Bartlett's familiar quotes get fed into the passwords now, too.
Yep.
Exactly. So you want to pick something that's unusual and different. That's
unique.
Why Randall Monroe, who does XKCD, said horse battery staple correct.
Yep.
Might have been in a different order, but it doesn't matter. The point is, it's four random words that don't mean anything but become ridiculously impossible to break.
Oh, correct. Horse battery staple. Oh, yes. A staple of the password industry.
Right, right. And don't use that one.
You want to hear something ridiculous in the world of security? My mortgage is with a well-known, at least regionally known bank, which has branches all over the place. I was having a problem with my online access, so I thought to myself, what's one of the securest ways I could deal with, you know, needing my password changed or having something adjusted? Well, you know, just go to one of their local branches with a picture ID, like my driver's license in hand, and, you know, it'd be positively identifying me.
Right.
You have to call this toll-free number.
Yeah.
Like, okay, gee whiz, I thought this was really secure, but oh well.
Yeah, too secure.
Thanks for your time, gentlemen. I hear the music.
Have fun. We're going to take a quick break. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is the truly great and truly grateful to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
And it's not a tumble yet until the 22nd.
It's not a what?
A tumble.
It is not autumnal.
The weather guy said we're having an autumnal breeze.
We're having an autumnal breeze, but it's not autumn yet.
Yeah, the weather's so messed up.
Yeah, it is. So, here's an interesting one. You'd be particularly interested in this. Samsung Display makes the best smartphone OLED screens in the world, as evidenced most recently by the Galaxy S8 and Note 8. So it makes total sense that Apple is putting a heavy reliance on the company to supply displays for the upcoming top-tier iPhone set to be announced this coming Tuesday, which will herald Apple's shift to OLED technology for its flagship smartphone. According to the well-sourced KGI analyst Ming-Chi Kuo, Samsung's position as the one and only supplier of displays for the iPhone 8, or whatever it's going to be end up being called, has put the company in a powerful position. As the next iPhone event nears, no other company is capable of producing phone-sized OLED displays at the same scale and consistency as Samsung. With slimmed-down bezels on all sides, the iPhone 8's display will be this phone's true centerpiece. So Apple can't afford any major deviations in quality. LG has made a return to OLED technology with this brand new V30, but the company doesn't need to worry about shipping anywhere near the same volume as the latest Galaxy smartphones. This dependence also allows Samsung to control pricing on the displays that Apple is buying, and there's really nowhere else to go at the moment. Quoix estimates that Apple is paying between $120 and $130 per unit, which is a significant hike up from the approximate $45 to $55 cost of each 5.5-inch LCD for the iPhone 7 Plus. Apple is certainly going to be passing that cost along to customers and then some. The New York Times recently reported that the iPhone 8 is likely to start at a price of around $1,000.
Huh?
$1,000. Fancier screens certainly play a part in that, as do the facial recognition capabilities rumored for the phone and Apple's pursuit of high profit margins. Quo says Apple is in urgent need of finding a second source of OLED, which would take some of that bargaining power away from Samsung's display unit, which, by the way, is separate from Samsung Mobile. It would also help resolve supply constraints. It's expected that the iPhone 8 will be hard to come by during its initial launch phase in the coming weeks. LG is the obvious go-to, and Apple is pumping over $2 billion into LG Display to secure OLED panels for the future iPhones. Google has also invested in LG's display business, and the Pixel 2 XL is rumored to be manufactured by LG Mobile and use an LG source screen. So what do you think of OLED screens? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
I am still getting so inundated by Samsung telling me I got to come back to the 8 now. The 8's good. You know, granted, you had trouble with the 7. We apologize for that. But you got to try the 8. And I'm going, yeah, no.
Didn't the Galaxy 8 start at like $800 too? $800 or $900 with 256 storage.
Yeah, they aren't cheap.
So the high end flagship phones from
they're all going to be $1,000 now.
Yep. Now what's kind of interesting is Foxconn is inking a deal in Wisconsin. So if you live in Wisconsin, this is really good news for you. Foxconn is the company that makes every electronic device for everybody in the world, pretty much.
Yeah.
They're building a $10 billion LCD factory in Wisconsin. The Wisconsin taxpayers are kicking in $3 billion in tax subsidies. So that's a heck of a deal for Foxconn.
That's a pretty good deal.
And they're going to be making LCD panels for Sharp and Samsung. Right. So all of the competitors still go to Foxconn to get the thing actually built.
Right.
Theoretically then, with another plant coming online, the prices of the OLEDs, which is tough to say, will drop a bit. And that's why they haven't been used as much as LCDs, is because the OLEDs are much more expensive and the LCDs are much cheaper to manufacture.
Yeah. On the other hand, OLEDs... have the advantage of much blacker blacks,
yep,
much sharper,
yeah,
colors, much brighter whites.
And much lower power.
And much lower power. So you get a much better screen for a lot less,
right,
electricity. And I'm surprised that I'm continually surprised to remember that Apple is not using OLED screens.
Well,
my phone,
the rumor,
Samsung S5, uses AMOLED, and it's very bright.
Cheaper version of OLED, but still better than LCD.
Still better than LCD.
Yeah. There's rumors that the next Apple Watch is going to use an OLED screen so that it can be always on. So you can actually use your watch to tell the time without doing the Apple Watch flick.
Yeah,
this one
is that. But I made it turn off anyway because the battery lasts longer.
Yeah, that's what I did with mine. I can just sit there and just turn it slightly.
Yeah.
And
But it's the basic idea here is that those screens are very... very bright, very, very clean, great.
Well, this I've got to turn down because the other one was so bright.
That's exactly right.
I think I put it on like the second setting.
Right.
Just to get it up there a little bit so I could see it. But, yeah, the other is what it came on. It's like, whoa, right. No, tone that down.
And people are beginning to notice that Apple does not have very bright, good screens comparatively anymore. You know, and people are, and so Apple wants to go to OLED. They're skipping AMOLED altogether and going straight to OLED. And I get that you know, it is much more expensive, and there is only one supplier.
Yep.
Right now, although LG, like we said, is getting into it. LG is another one of those companies that makes an amazing number of products. And makes products for pretty much everybody in the industry as well.
Well, yeah.
Watches are from LG.
Yeah. And they've been the leaders in technology. Going back to my days at Home Depot, they were the first ones to come out with what they called the smart appliance technology. And basically what that was, and I have it like on my washer and dryer. If one of them is having an issue, throwing out a code, all I have to do is call LG up, and they say, okay, put the phone next to the unit, and they have you hit a combination of buttons. It will give off a tone, and that tone tells them exactly what is wrong with it so that when the technician comes out, he knows what he has to fix and have the parts for it.
Yep.
And they do that now on their washers and dryers, and you know they came up with a better technology all the way around for that.
Some pretty interesting stuff that's going on there in terms of we have an LG refrigerator. You know, LG makes everything.
Life's good.
What?
Life's good.
Life's good. That's it. LG. Life's good. And they will be making. They will be. They've been making their own OLED panels for a long time. I have an LG watch. Got an LG OLED panel on it.
What the caller there was just pointing out is that technology for the screen was actually invented by Eastman Kodak Company.
Yes, it was.
And sold to Samsung.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
It was developed here in Rochester.
Yep. Another technology Kodak didn't capitalize on.
Exactly.
Well,
they made a few bucks selling it to Samsung, and Samsung made $1 billion selling it to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But basically the idea here is that Apple is finally brightening up their screens, and the lower power should mean longer battery life as well. One of the issues that LCD screens have is that they suck battery.
Yeah.
And actually, so
they sold it to LG in 2009 for $100 million.
Yeah. Kodak did.
Kodak did.
Consequently, Apple, I'm talking about the LED, LCD screens now. Consequently, Apple's battery should last much longer now if they go to OLED screens. Not only will it be brighter and a little bit faster and a little bit nicer and et cetera, but it'll also be cheaper in terms of the amount of electricity it draws. So that's nice. And believe me, once you've seen and either an AMOLED or a full OLED screen, you really don't want to go back.
Yeah.
The only problem, of course, with OLED screens is the O. The O stands for organic. It's organic light-emitting diodes.
Yep.
And the problem with organic is eventually they rot. So at some point, and we're talking years, longer than most people will own their phone. But at some point, the display starts to degrade because of, organic rot.
Yeah.
And
it's dead, Jim.
It's it's certainly dying, whether or not it's dead. But
I'm feeling much better.
It's right. Ain't dead yet.
There's a Python quote for everything.
There is. There actually is.
What is that, the fourth one today?
Yeah. Ooh. Which means you've been really constrained, I think. Very nicely done for you.
Yeah.
So the basic idea becomes one of quality for a lower cost than electricity, and that's a beautiful thing. So I think that Apple people are going to be very happy that Apple has finally invented the OLED screen and that they'll be using it in their stuff. All right, that music tells me that we're done for another week. You've wasted two solid hours of your life with this nonsense. But we are hurtling headlong into our 29th year on the air. And we're very excited that you're along for the journey. And so thank you all very much. We'll be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco. But don't go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And you don't have all that long before we'll be right back here with more news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, all that nonsense. So you've been listening to Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1, and we will see you in 166 hours.